Welcome to one of the final off-season episodes of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I'm Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. And we're joined today by one of the absolute best in the college basketball television game, one of our favorite guests. Maybe we'll just go ahead and call him our favorite guest. Dr. John Giannini, former LaSalle head coach, current USA Network broadcaster. Thank you for joining us, Coach.
Oh, it's a blast to be here, and I enjoy your podcast. I listen to them. I told you before we started recording here how impressed, sincerely, I am with your knowledge of the league, and especially in the offseason, you're more up-to-date on what you're reading. I'll get a lot deeper this time of year and certainly when the games start, but you guys keep me updated in the offseason, and you do a really great job. Thanks so much.
Well, we really thank you for that praise, and we want to kick things off today with a guy that I know you have gotten to spend some time watching, a guy right in your backyard in Philadelphia, and someone that you heaped some praise on during a broadcast last season. And that is maybe the biggest wild card in this whole conference, Christ Esondeko, the big man over at St. Joe's, a guy who could be the difference between them being title contenders or an average team. What might we see out of this big Frenchman?
He's huge. He is next level big, meaning highest level of college, NBA type size. And the question is, how is he going to be used? How is he going to play? And I'll tell you something that I heard about and didn't see and something I actually saw. So what I didn't see is in their first inter-squad scrimmage, he took 9 threes. That's a lot for a 7-footer, but he made 4 of them. But as a big guy, 7 foot and 270, 280, you could fall in love with the perimeter, and all of a sudden your size isn't being used to your advantage maybe as much as it should. And certainly people are more consistent at that size scoring around the basket than from playing out on the perimeter. Locally here, of course, Joel Embiid is a huge guy who plays a lot away from the basket, but he is one of the top 4 or 5 players in the world. So my question was, how is he going to be used? And because he's skilled, might he gravitate out a little bit more than I would want as a coach? So then I'll tell you what I actually saw. I went to practice, and they really worked on getting him the ball inside. And if a guy that size, and he's got soft touch, and he's a giant target, and he's big and heavy enough where I don't think people are going to get around him very easily. And what they were working on was old school good, getting him the ball deep in the paint, not just on the block where you could get double teamed and have to maybe shoot over another big, strong defender, but getting him deep in the paint where you could really use your size. And if they do that consistently with him, he's going to be hard to stop. Now, he's, as I mentioned, he can make threes. He's really good putting it on the floor from 15, 17 feet, getting the ball at the elbow. He's really good taking 1 or 2 hard dribbles and jump stopping into a post move. He gets a bunch of rebounds in his area. He has enough length to block shots. So I think he's a difference maker, unless you can kind of tempt him into shooting a lot of jump shots. And he might make a lot on a given night, but he could miss a lot on a given night too. But I wouldn't want to guard him in the paint area at all.
Yeah, and if they're throwing him the ball in the paint, that would mean that they really got some trust in his skill, because Billy Lang's teams, dating back to a large amount of his Navy tenure, 8 of the last 9 years, they've been top 25 nationally in three-point rate attempted. So that would be a little bit of a sea change on that offense.
So this, and I know Billy Lang very well. A lot of people don't know this. I coached Billy Lang at Rowan on our Final Four team, my first Final Four team. He was a part of it, and he was a blood and guts player who wanted to be a coach and would dive on the floor and bite you in the kneecaps, to use a Detroit Lions reference. But Billy and I go way back. I love him, and I know how he understands modern basketball way better than me in terms of analytics and spacing and false movement and spreading the court. And I know how his teams have played, but the practice I went to was a throwback. They spent 5-10 minutes on a hard-nosed, old-fashioned, warlike rebounding drill. They worked on getting the ball to Asandico deep in the paint. If they get gritty that way and rebound, and the other thing is they just have better defensive talent. You look at his first few teams, and they had some really good offensive players that were maybe better offensively than defensively. Their length and athleticism now is just going to make them better defensively based on personnel alone. So I'm really high in the Hawks, and I think if they defend the way their personnel can, and they have the rim protection in Asandico, and they're a good rebounding team, and they get the ball inside, and they play inside out complementary basketball, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, and I've asked this question to every person who pays attention to St. Joe's, whether on the pod or offline. And you basically covered it in your thoughts, but kind of drilling down a little bit more specifically, do any of these freshmen specifically look like a big-time impact defender who could work their way into the lineup for that reason?
Yes. Let me pull up their roster over here. Freshman class, really talented. They along with UMass, when everyone else went transfer portal, went freshman. And St. Joe's freshman class is legit, legit. The point guard, Brown, is very talented. The forward, Haskins, can really score. The forward, Simmons, is more of a defensive specialist, athletic guy. Finkley is like a bruising, undersized four-man. And, of course, we already talked about Asendico. But I think Haskins can really impact them offensively in his career, maybe some this year. Simmons can really impact them defensively throughout his career, perhaps this year. And the point guard, Brown, I think will be hard to keep off the court as the season goes on. And frankly, as his career goes on, is just going to be a fan favorite because he's going to battle, he's going to fight. Everyone likes a guy who fills that role. So really, really good freshman class. And those guys will see minutes. So Coach Lang retained a lot of talent. And that's why, Greer, Brown, Reynolds, Fleming, all those guys came back. Moving forward, he has to have that freshman class come back. So I think he's going to play them as much as he can. He wants to develop them. He believes in them. They're clearly a bright future for the program if those guys could stay together.
We talked about this a little bit offline before recording, but you had mentioned how many talented freshmen there are around the conference. Yeah. And I feel like the last couple of years with immediate transfer eligibility, that's been the big point of attention over the offseason. Who did everybody get in the transfer portal? But St. Joe's really rebuilt their roster through freshmen. I think of a couple of other teams, UMass, you already mentioned, George Washington. Just in general, do you feel like that might be a winning strategy for some of maybe the A-10 programs that haven't had quite as much success the last few years to pivot away from the transfer portal, and maybe they'll have more opportunities to get freshmen that the high major coaches just aren't paying as much attention to anymore?
You nailed it, Matt. People want older. They want proven talent. More people are hitting the transfer portal, and the high major potential, mid-major plus type guys, they're being under-recruited. And St. Joe's got five of them in one class. And I mean, these guys are good. Now the challenge is retention. And St. Joe's has already proven that they could retain good players. And if they do that with this freshman class, they're going to be really good. I think, and we can talk about it some more, there's several freshman steals and a lot of foreign international steals. There's some junior college steals. Rhode Island got some really good junior college players. So I think, as you said, there's a lot of focus on the transfer portal, and there's some bargains to be had in other buckets of the recruiting pool.
Yeah, so we'll keep it in the Philly area here. I do want to pivot to some of those other potentially talented freshmen that are coming in from the international zone. And those are the guys going over to LaSalle. Who's going to be the big impact player on this young group of Explorers? Because they got to fill a lot of minutes in the front court this year.
Well, first, we got to be a little old school, like their legendary coach, who has more than stood the test of time. And he'll want to focus on the returning players, the guys who have proven themselves. Brickus Brantley, the two smaller guards, are two peas in a pod and hard to guard. And then the versatile defensive athletic wings and Gillen Shepherd, Yosis, the 6'10 Lithuanians, a sophomore. But the guy who I was surprised at is Tunde Fasasi from Sweden. There's a bunch of international players on the LaSalle roster, but Fasasi is exceptional in my opinion. First, he does the things you would expect from a very good international player. He's 6'8", and he can shoot the ball and put it on the floor. Here's what I did not expect. He can guard at least four, if not five, positions. And sometimes, and it's usually harder for someone at 6'8". You could guard a post player maybe a little bigger and stronger. But to guard a Brickus or a Brantley, a 5'10", 5'11 guy, not many 6'8 guys can do this. Fasasi can guard smaller players. He can really move his feet. He is a defensive strength. He's not a defensive liability. And then his IQ is more than shot selection and being able to dribble and the kind of good skill level that we've become accustomed to with good European players. He really knows how to move with the ball. He is an outstanding cutter. He will get four layups a game, I predict, just knowing when to cut to the basket. As soon as his defender turns his head, he's cutting to the basket. He recognizes that. So I'm super high on Fasasi. And if he's not starting, he could sub in at any position. And he's going to get his share of minutes, not only because he's a very good player, but because he can sub in at any position. You could put him really pretty much anywhere outside of the point guard position. And I'm obviously excited about him. He would be on my group of freshmen to really be excited about and watch. And he's another one of a handful of international steals as well.
Yeah, how about Rokas Josias, one of those guys you mentioned coming back? He was a guy who was impressive in certain games and non-existent in others. I assume he'll be the starting center for them this year. So he's going to have to take on a heavy workload.
Well, Coach Duff is a big prove it as you go. If you have a couple bad practices, you could lose a starting spot in a long time. So it real quickly. So not much guaranteed with Coach Dumphy in a good way. He holds people respectfully accountable, and his players are always motivated. It's one of the reasons he was always so hard for me to play against when he was at Penn and Temple. His guys always came to play, and that's because if they don't give the necessary effort, it's going to affect their minutes. So Coach Dumphy is a big prove-it type coach, but Josias on paper should be the starting center. He's the biggest. He's the most skilled. You said he was inconsistent, but a lot of freshmen are that way. So we all know the cliche, the freshman, a sophomore jump, and it's time for Josias to make that jump. And I think LaSalle is six deep with that starting lineup, the two guards, the two wings, Josias in the middle and Fasasi. That I think is a starter level player that may come off the bench, and then they need someone else to emerge. Ideally, you want a Noah's Ark team, two of every. So they have two little guards, they have two good wings. Now they need another good guy off the bench to complement Fasasi, and they need another good post player to complement Josias. Then you got your Noah's Ark team.
I'm taking that phrase. That is fantastic.
That is. But you mentioned other just talented freshmen across the league, and in particular, a lot of international freshmen. But just in general, this is something that I think Tyler and I have a hard time with, just because over the summer, it's difficult to figure out. But who are a couple of the other first-year players just around the A-10 that you think could have an immediate impact based on the needs of their teams?
So I have not seen these players, but their coaches are gushing about them, not liking them, but extremely excited. Loyola loves the 6'10" player Ruben out of Simeon in Chicago. Made some comparisons to Oshun-Oshunyi. We know that's very high praise. They have a bunch of veteran big guys. They love the player Welch, and I love him as well. He was the best practice player slash leader energy guy I saw in any practice last year. He's terrific. They have Adelikin, who was an all Ivy League player. So they have an all Ivy player in the Ivy. We know how good the Ivy League is. Yale, Princeton going to the Sweet 16, really good teams in that league. This is an all Ivy guy. And again, it could change week to week, but they started a freshman ahead of an all Ivy grad transfer. That's a heck of a statement. To compare him to Oshunyi is a heck of a statement. I asked Coach Miller at Rhode Island. I said, and he's very positive about his team and doesn't care about the preseason rankings, as no coach should. I know fans do, but coaches and players really don't. You look at Tyler's Duquesne Dukes last year, picked last and then finishing sixth, or Fordham last year being picked, I think, 11th and finishing in second. So you could throw those out, those preseason polls, once the game starts. And I know that's how Coach Miller thinks, but he believes his German player Fuchs is a highest level guy. He said he could have played for him anywhere. So that means Dayton Elite Eight, top 20 Indiana teams. He feels he would have been a terrific player on any team he's ever coached. So that's a mouthful. And Coach McKillop had a player from the player Adam, Hunter Adam, who is another New Zealander, come in at mid-year last year. And he gushes about his competitiveness, his intensity, his intangibles as something that's at the highest level. And this is a program that's had highest level international players. And the way they used to talk about Jon Axel Gudmundsson or Brajkovic or Menenga, well, that's how they're talking about Adam, and with no exaggeration. So those would be some of the other foreign players and freshmen that, to me, jumped out in the way their coaches spoke about them.
Yeah, Hunter Adam is a name that I'm not sure we spent more than maybe 10 seconds on in our Davidson preview. And that's a team that definitely needs a spark from their young guys. So hopefully he can provide that for them.
But when I spoke with Coach McKillop, he spent a lot more than 10 seconds talking about him. He loves him.
So we'll turn things over here to some of the teams predicted at the top of the league. And I want to start with what to me is the biggest wild card in this league. St. Bonaventure brings back all of the guys from their rotation that they started playing heavily in late January. They won some really tough games with those guys late in January, early February, but closed on a big rough patch, ended up in ninth place. And now they add a pair of highly touted transfers, the Cincinnati point guard Micah Adams-Woods and the Bryant transfer Charles Pride. What are you looking at with St. Bonaventure right now? It's a lot of proven veteran guys. Not 100% clear how they're all going to fit together.
I think they're getting a picture of how they're going to fit together. The returning guys are the core. All the starting five are back, and it's a really good lineup. But they were an expansion team last year. They literally, as you well know, had no returning players. So for them to be as competitive as they were starting from scratch is, in my opinion, what they and Duquesne did last year was astounding. You're talking You talk normally about it takes a few years, maybe 3 years, to really make a program the way a coach wants it with their own players and players who have experience. They had 1 year building processes. Duquesne a little more successfully than St. Bonaventure, but with that St. Bonaventure playbook and the complexity of their system, that experience is going to be a huge deal for St. Bonaventure. And then, like you said, they love the guys they added. Woods is very talented. The guy Pride, though, is just super productive. They love his toughness, and he does work every single day. He's not a super enormously physically gifted guy. Obviously, he's talented, but he's not a potential guy. He's a production guy. And we could talk about this later with a few teams, potential versus production. But I think you could pencil Pride in as, if not a starter, one of the best six men in the league, because I think he's going to be productive. And the underrated guy here and is going to be, believe it or not, Noel Brown and Martinez. Those two guys will give them some depth for when Venning comes out of the game. And you know Brown from George Washington, he really flashed potential at times. I mean, this guy's 6'11", 265, and a good athlete, and he's experienced. So I believe they have quality depth at the center position. I think, you know, they don't sub a whole lot at St. Bonaventure, but they are at least eight deep with the five guys returning and then the three transfers, Brown, Pride, and Adams Woods. And you know how tough they are. It's interesting, and it speaks to places like St. Bonaventure and Dayton. I'm going way back. One coach told me the way to evaluate a job is not recruiting base or budget or facility, because by all those standards, St. Bonaventure wouldn't be that good of a job. He said, evaluate a job by their home court winning percentage over a 20-year period. Like, are you going to win, you know, 10 home games a year just because they always win 10 home games a year? And the Raleigh Center is a monster. So I have high expectations. When Mark Schmidt has an experienced, talented team and he has some depth and they have that fan base behind them, they're going to be a tough team in the league.
Yeah, one of my biggest questions with them, now obviously setting aside Darryl Banks, who's a guy who could get 35 on any given night, is that a team that's going to have some trouble scoring the ball, or does Pride and maybe an improved Moses Flowers take care of that, or is it just Mark Schmidt will find a way when he has talented guys?
I think it's a lot of the latter. I think Venning became a very good scorer as the season went on. I think Farrell has some all-conference or borderline all-conference scoring traits and can shoot the ball. And like you said, Adams Woods and Pride, they've scored at a high level. So I don't think, and he can manufacture shots with his playbook. And remember, the playbook was more limited last year. So the way he does business is the older guys show the new guys how to run stuff. And that was impossible last year because no one knew what they were doing. And his style of play, I'm telling you, is very unique. Most people don't coach offense the way Mark Schmidt does. And he runs stuff that's hard to guard. He gets guys shots. And he'll be able to do that much better this year with these guys knowing that playbook and being able to build on the playbook. And those guys teaching the new players. The new guys will pick up a lot quicker because they'll be able to see how it works, as opposed to last year where they were just told how it works but couldn't really see it.
Yeah, we've seen St. Bonaventure in the past under Mark Schmidt have some very successful seasons when they have a lot of continuity, and they have about as much as anybody in the A-10 this year. But I want to ask you about another one of the favorites, a team that brings back as little as anybody, and it's VCU, which I feel like this is just one of the most unique positions we've seen in the A-10, where a team loses their head coach, really only brings back one key bench player, Zeb Jackson, but reloads with the transfer portal, Ryan Odom brings two of his best Utah State players with him. And I think part of it just has to do with VCU's excellent track record of success, but the Rams are picked second in the A-10. How do you think they can overcome kind of what St. Bonaventure went through last year, just having almost an expansion team and still being one of the top dogs in the conference?
VCU and Dayton recruit at a higher level than everyone else in the league. It's just the way it is. They have high major plus fan bases. They have high major plus facilities. They have track records of success and of NBA players. I mean, think of what we just said. Highest level fan bases, highest level facilities, and NBA track records. No one else in the league can say those three things. So when you're looking at guys, like I'm looking at their roster now, further down, guys that you don't know very much about, the Okafors, the Furmans, the Lawals, the Billups, guys who didn't play very much in the past, those guys all had high major interest. They're just recruited at a different level. So there is talent there. They've had terrific coaches. Coach Odom's going to absolutely continue that. He is as proven a coach as I've seen come into the A-10 as a new coach. And they have talent. You know, Nelson was a terrific recruit for Richmond. Zeb Jackson is the one guy returning who saw a lot of playing time last year. And I know you guys were talking about his shooting woes, and then he shot the heck of it out of it in their first exhibition game. So we'll see if that's an anomaly or not. But there's talent there, and they have a terrific coach. The Utah State guys, Shulga and Bairstow. Bairstow's injury is a real problem because we talked about it last year. Non-conference performance is everything, not only for teams, but for the league. And then they have some guys who didn't play much at high major situations, and Kwani and the big guy, their Louisville transfer. Let's see, what is his name?
Wheeler.
Wheeler. So I'm telling you, everyone on that roster was recruited. There's no guy, a Mark Schmidt type guy, who he found or he just evaluated and is an overachiever and is going to surprise people. Or my favorite term, a back gym recruiter, where you got to go in the back gym, not where all the high major guys are, and try to find someone. The guys playing for VCU, they were big gym, front gym, AAU players. They weren't in the back gym where, you know, someone like me had to try to go find someone, or like Coach Smith does. The guys at Dayton and VCU, they were recruited and they got talent.
So I want to ask your perspective as a former coach. Right now, VCU with Bairstow out only has 9 healthy scholarship players to enter the season. Now, let's say hypothetically, fingers crossed, all 9 of those guys manage to stay healthy, so they can put together a full rotation from game to game. But is that a problem just going through practice? Does it hurt not having that extra flexibility of those last few scholarship guys?
So it does, but you could be creative. You could do more skill work, more conditioning, more scout team stuff, more 4-on-4 stuff. Coaches are creative. You can overcome that sort of thing. And here's the other thing. If you already have injury problems and a lack of depth, you don't want to be scrimmaging all out competition. I'll never forget my trainer, Bill Gerzebeck, when I asked him what's the key to reducing injuries. And I thought he would give me some sports science piece of unique information. And he said, it's exposures. The more you bang and hit each other and the more live scrimmaging you do, your injuries are just going to go up. So, if you're only 9 deep, maybe you don't do that much more in practice and you do some of that creative stuff. And looking at a few teams in this league, there's the balance between chemistry and depth. A few years ago, there was a study done that showed that the teams in the Final Four were pretty much playing 7 guys. And I like this John Rothstein quote that I do believe in, that depth is underrated for practice, to your point, but overrated in games. you'll want to keep your best players in the game. You don't want to sub them out too much. You want them to be confident. You want them to be in a flow. So I stand by that quote that, depth is underrated for practice because to your point, you need to scrimmage and compete. But in games, when you try to get a rotation, the magic number is really eight. It's unless you are old school Havoc and really pressing and really running and trying to score 90 points a game and picking up full court every possession. If you're doing that, you want to be 10 deep. But if your opportunity fast break and not trying to just dominate the tempo and style of play, eight is pretty much the best number for a coach to rotate in and out.
So speaking of depth, we'll flip it over to the preseason number one, who went from struggling to be able to find eight given all their injuries last season to now being a pretty deep team all over. And that's the Dayton Flyers. We just watched them about a week and a half ago really hold their own against an Ohio State team that I think a lot of people expect to be in the NCAA tournament this year. So what caught your eye from the young and transfer-laden Flyers in that one?
Yeah, great question. But again, let's start with the returning guys, that those perimeter players just being healthy. Smith, Elvis, Bria. I mean, Bria was in a wheelchair last year and had two rods in his legs. I mean, these guys all had surgery. This was not a sore ankle or a jammed thumb. This was serious stuff this team went through. On many levels last year, emotionally off the court, but then their physical health, it was a serious problem. Obviously, Kamara and Holmes stayed healthy and they were phenomenal inside, but guards are everything in college basketball. I don't care how good your big guys are. If you can't make shots, handle the ball, play with tempo, have guys be creative, have people feed the post, have people stretch defenses, you're really going to be limited. I'm actually really impressed Dayton did what they were able to do with those three guys missing so much time and not being anywhere near 100%. So this is short Kamara. This now is the team that Dayton wanted to have without Kamara. So we talked about it before we started the show. I see a rotation at the power forward with Santos, who is, I thought looked really good. He hasn't made shots yet, but he looks to be a good rebounder. He looks to be a good defender. He looks comfortable. He looks to have shooting range, and the shot looks good. So I see Santos Pettijimas, the freshman from Lithuania, who also looks like a tough guy who will rebound and skilled at 6'9". Nwokeji, who's a vet. You got a three-person rotation now at power forward. And that's a nice way to balance minutes, have those guys be competitive, find out who's going to be playing well on any given night. You have the big guy Jack at 6'11 backing it up Holmes. And then on the perimeter, I think we talked about the really good returning guys, the core group, but the point guard who is freshman of the year in the NEC coming in, Bennett, I mean, he's a defensive factor. He gives him good depth. I like him a lot. And I like the freshmen, Allen and Simon. Those guys will give them quality minutes. So I do think this is an 8 to 10 deep team. And I think these guys could play at a high level. Cheeks, we talked about it. He made his three threes, three for three and threes. For Robert Morris last year in the NCAA tournament at Dayton Arena. And then his first exhibition game in Dayton Arena, he's 5 for 5 on threes. That's 8 for 8 on threes in his first two games in Dayton Arena. Plus, he's known as a versatile guy who could rebound, defend, block shots. The new guys look the part. And I think they have enough depth at power forward, they have enough complementary perimeter guys. I think Dayton looks really good.
What do you think about Dayton overall? Just because I think all the talented guys you mentioned, I think they have so many different options to throw out there on the court every night. But losing to Monte Kamara, who's getting minutes in the NBA right now and is off to a great start in his professional career, how do you think Dayton just replaces that rebounding? Because it seems like they're going to be playing a little bit smaller. Is this just something where the Flyers are going to need to change the style they've played with the last couple of years and spread the floor out a little bit more and try to win in other ways?
No, I think Cheeks will give them some better rebounding from the wing position, and you've had some really good wing rebounders in past years. Holmes will be outstanding. And then Kamara is, we said it, that's a committee thing. That's Santos, Pettijimas, or KG. It's by committee. And they could play with the system they run, they could play Jack and Holmes together pretty easily too. So I think they have plenty of size. You know, none of those guys I mentioned besides Holmes is a likely NBA draft choice the way Kamara was. But again, their perimeter is going to be much better. Their depth is going to be much better. So you give up a little bit of rebounding. I would take that trade.
So we'll flip it to the last of the favorites that we haven't touched on yet. The anti-Noah's Ark team, the Duquesne Dukes, because Keith Dambrot went out, got himself a whole bunch of rhinoceroses, and kind of skimped on the smaller animals, relying on Clark and Grant and Rozier to really carry them in the backcourt this year.
That's a great point. And we've talked about the balance between depth and chemistry. And a lot of times chemistry is better when you don't have a lot of depth and you have 6, 7, 8 guys who are comfortable and confident and really know how to play with each other. And of course, that's the opposite of depth. And ideally, you'd like both, but there's a continuum with those two things. And I believe that Duquesne is a hybrid. They won't be as deep on the perimeter, but those are proven players, especially with Grant and Clark, and they can have great chemistry. I picture those perimeter guys having terrific years, and we talked last year about Rozier's unique leadership traits, and I think those guys will play a lot of minutes and be really comfortable and have good chemistry, and Grant and Clark will be potential probable all-conference players, especially with Grant. And Clark, we know what a difference maker he is defensively. Now, up front is a completely different animal. Now we're talking more depth than chemistry, and they got to figure that out. Trey Williams is going to play a lot. He's too good a defender, too old, too proven, too strong. Really like him. So the core is obviously Grant, Clark, and Williams. What I'm intrigued with, and we talked about it last year, Dixon and Barre are healthy. And I always think in the A-10, who can play up? Who can play in the ACC and Big Ten? Because those are the guys that get you into that top 50 net ranking and get you in position to have an at-large possibility. The A-10 has been the name of your podcast, three-bid league. You've had three-bid league years forever because you have guys who could play on top 40-ish teams. The challenge is, can you play Dixon and Barre together? I don't think we'll see a lot of it this year, but those guys got to play because much like the St. Joe's freshman class, these guys could be future all-conference guys. They could be building blocks. They are program makers and cornerstones. So you got to find a way to get Dixon and Barre on the court. Then Savrasov, the Georgia Southern transfer. I mean, he checks every box. He makes threes. He's strong. He's productive. Then you have the Drame twins, which are energy guys. Now, the other question mark is Mohorčić, who has a ton of potential, but his health is just a question mark. But for the question is, can you find someone? And I don't really see it. Can you maybe move one of those guys to the three spot? You probably can with the Drames, maybe with Savrasov. I'd be fascinated to see if they're experimenting with that at all. And I don't know that, but that would be the solution to help your depth on the perimeter and find more minutes for the wealth of frontline talent they have and the likely candidates would be Savrasov or the Drame twins to get some minutes at the three. But Williams is going to be an all-conference candidate. Barry and Dixon, you just got to find a way to get those guys in because they're higher-level guys in terms of their physical traits. Savrasov is proven. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah,
and that's exactly going to be my question. Just if any of these bigger wings could play the three and help out the backcourt a little bit. And I just think it's interesting. Last year, Duquesne was about as deadly of a 3-point shooting team as we saw in the A-10. Do you think that's going to continue and that's how they're going to win games, or will they just have to out physical all of their opponents this year?
Yeah, I think they're different. And you know, I picture this team to have great role definition outside of the possibility of a bigger three. Can one of the Drame twins or Savrasov become a utility player where they could play the four or the three? And that does not sound like a big jump, but in most systems, it's a really big jump. Four going to a three, all of a sudden now you may have to guard 6'2 to 6'5 guys instead of 6'7 to 6'9. That's extremely different. And once you move to the three, very few people are running an inside triangle type offense or posting up their mismatches as much as I think they should. A three is they're spending almost all their time on the arc, whereas a power forward is probably 50-50 inside outside. So that jump from a four to a three, you're guarding much smaller players. You're spending way more time at 20 feet than any time around the basket. So, you know, can they move some of those guys there? I have not seen Savrasov play live. I do think the Drame twins can do it some. But then they have guys like Ronski and Barba who are more natural threes that probably can slide in there some too. But my question is, how do you use all that front court depth? And that's where coach is going to have to be creative. And again, you don't want to be running people in just to get guys minutes because now that does affect rhythm and chemistry. So it's a good problem for coach to have. And the solution would be if you could slide someone over for a chunk of the game to one of those perimeter spots. But their role definition, I think, will be outstanding. Yeah, their 3-point shooting is something to be a little bit concerned with on paper because they lose a good amount of that. So that would be another concern.
Yeah. And the one guy that you mentioned that I feel like has probably not gotten the proper attention this offseason because he isn't a newcomer is Barre. He's a guy who just couldn't get healthy last year. And that coaching staff doesn't whisper about how much they like him. They're one step away from grabbing a megaphone and running through the city of Pittsburgh up and down the streets, telling people how much they like him.
They know very well. They got to find a way to play, develop, and retain Dixon and Barry. Those two guys, they're too young, they're too talented, and it's going to be challenging. And you got to sell them on exactly what I said, developing and their high ceiling. And if those two guys stick with that program and stay in a place where they're comfortable and valued and understand, they're just on a very deep team this year. And because of injuries and youth that they're not as experienced as some of the older guys, if those guys can have a little bit of patience with themselves and develop, they're going to be monsters in this league in the near future.
Yeah, and the indication is that Barre may be starting from day one, so we'll see if what he can do with those big minutes. But the last team that we really wanted to go super in-depth on, the Fordham Rams, who have just not gotten a lot of traction this offseason after their best year, certainly of mine and Matt's lifetimes. And for me, I want to start with the fact that everyone's concerned. Yes, they do lose two offensive studs, but they bring back the core of a defense that would just beat you up last year. Charlton, Rose, Richardson, Simbilla, all back. Are we just overlooking the fact that Fordham's probably going to have an elite defense once again?
They're going to be really good. I got a couple non-conference games circled over here, and one of them is absolutely Fordham and St. John's. So two things about Fordham. First, identity. I got to see how they formed their culture and identity up close, and I was phenomenally impressed. Now, every coach does care about offense because it's half the game and you have to score points. But in terms of how they communicate and what they reward and what they value, they literally will tell their players, Coach Urban will say, scoring's not how you're going to get on the court. And they have an attitude chart, and the people at the top of the attitude chart are going to play the most minutes. There's nothing about three-point percentage or scoring on that chart. Coach Ergo's a tough guy. Every coach talks about toughness, but Coach Ergo, I was extremely impressed that that's who he is. It's what he cares about. It's what he teaches. It's what he preaches. They really got after it more than just about any team I've seen in a practice situation. Now the talent. I'm just going to go through some guys you don't know. So Japhet Medore, who just got eligible. I did a lot of Conference USA last year. I did two Texas San Antonio games and watched them on tape for probably 10 games. That league had a Final Four team, the two NIT finalists, the CBI champion, and Medore was arguably the quickest player in that league. Certainly no one was quicker than him. In his first exhibition game yesterday, just finding out he's eligible, he had 23 points. He's really good. Joshua Rivera only shot 1 for 13 yesterday, but 7 for 7 from the line. But he was an all-conference guy. I think second team at Lafayette. He's better than that. He is going to have a 10 all-conference potential. He's just a sophomore this year, but he is got great at six. He's 6'7", 6'6", but really strong and really skilled and a good athlete. Their freshmen from last year, Elijah Gray, Ramad Dean. I mean, these guys are 6'7", 6'8", and they look the part. Angel Montas was, by all accounts, the best player in their program last year, preseason, before he got hurt. Jahmyr Tripp was an A-10 level recruit. This team is really deep. And they're really tough. They're not just tough. They're mean. They are highest level toughness, and their defense is going to keep them in games. And they're another one of these programs. I really dislike Rose Hill Gym. I know it's historic and all that, but I think it's a terrible place and a terrible facility. But they've made that into a home court advantage because visiting teams don't want to go in there. It's not nice. It doesn't have any big time feel to it, but they're going to pack that place and really make it a hard place to win for opponents. You know, I'm big on Fordham. You know, I sound overly positive over here today, but to your point, we've focused on the top teams, and here's the key to the A-10. Phil Martelli said this right when I got in the league. And I'll go back to my second year when GW had the great team and went 16-0. And we've seen the undefeated Dayton team, and we've seen great VCU teams. And your top teams have to lead the way, especially non-conference. And that's where the burden on this league is. If your preseason top teams, if like last year, Dayton is a top preseason team, has serious injuries. That's a big problem for this league. Like, your lead dogs in that sled ride, your lead dogs have to lead the way. They can't fall to the middle or back of that sled order that they're in. The lead dogs got to lead. So these teams that we're talking about, St. Joe's against Villanova, huge game for the league. Duquesne against Charleston, and, you know, Dayton against Northwestern early, and the exempt tournaments that people are in Orlando and Charleston. Like, the lead dog's got to lead. These teams we're talking about, they got to come through. And then there's got to be some pleasant surprises as well.
All incredibly important stuff. And yet the one thing that will not leave my mind from what you just said, Joshua Rivera, all conference potential, because I have been probably too overly optimistic on this guy since I started researching him back in the spring. I am very high on him as a guy who can be a, I hesitate to say poor man's, but Khalid Moore was incredible last season. Be a poor man's Khalid Moore in this season, and then hopefully grow into something even better in his next 2 years.
So losing Quisenberry and Moore is huge. Two all-conference players, but they are far deeper, bigger, more athletic than any Fordham team. So this is what, my 20th year now following the league. I mean, there's no Fordham team that comes close to, there's been good ones, but nothing like 11, 12 legit 8-10 level guys who could be in rotations on good teams and be in rotations at other schools. Frankly, a lot of the lower level 8-10 teams, like when you get into their deep bench, they, you know, you see some lower Division I level, Division II level guys. That's not the case at Fordham. Their 11th, 12th guys are legitimate right now.
Yeah, so we covered about half the league in depth. So the other half of the teams, any other thoughts that you want to put out there?
Well, why don't you name, and I'll give a nugget on each. If you go through them each, I'll say whatever I know, if anything.
Well, let's do George Mason, because that team's also hanging in my mind as someone that I don't have a full grasp on yet.
Yeah, another team that I don't have a great feel for. I'll quote their coaches. They have really good length. A bunch of 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", guys. What I often find with teams like this is, you know, like Maddox, for example. How are the guys who are transferring but were highly recruited guys but maybe didn't play a lot at their previous school, you know, the Halls, the Maddox, the Newtons, how does that transfer over? But they're certainly more optimistic than they're not. They really like the freshman point guard Okoji. They want to figure out how to play he and Polite together. So, you know, how much can their transfers, most notably Maddox, contribute early on? How they should be good defensively because their length. I watched some tape on them. They're playing some zone. So I think they could be a funky team to play against where they take you out of rhythm with some pressing and zone and changing defenses, and they're long and they're athletic. Again, if like a lot of teams, then Duquesne, how are they going to shoot the ball? So I think playing the two good young guards together is a question mark. I think how well they shoot the ball is a question mark. I think how well their transfers score the ball is a question mark, but they will be long and athletic and do some things that will take people out of rhythm. So I would put them in a category where they could surprise.
I feel like a team that most people are down on this year, but it's kind of been one of our recurring jokes that they're just perennially fourth place. What do you think about St. Louis after losing so many of their productive seniors?
Yeah, I think that they are a gigantic question mark outside of Jimerson. Let me try to pull up what they've done over here. I mean, Jimerson speaks for himself. Now, the crazy thing about them, and when I say crazy, it is crazy. They've had two exhibition games and played a starting lineup 6'5 or under. I mean, legitimately a forward and four guards. And that's not the way that I've ever seen a Travis Ford team play. So they are waiting on eligibility issues with Ezewiro getting a waiver for his three-time transfer. They have multiple foreign big men waiting on clearance for their foreign certification and amateurism issues. So they are by far the biggest unknown right now. But Gibson, Jimerson is not an unknown. Terrence Hargrove is not an unknown. they recruit well, they have a proven coach, but what's going to happen with their big guys is beyond uncertain.
So to close this thing out, I would ask you what's the key, but I know what you're going to say. It's win those tough non-conference games. So I want to go on to the flip side in the non-con to ask you as a former coach and now as someone who's going to be trying to learn about these teams in November and December as well. When we go to the other games, when LaSalle is playing St. Mary's of the Forest or some team that they should just crush, what are you looking for in a blowout against a less talented team when you're trying to evaluate players and see what some of these young, unproven guys that we've talked about, what they can bring to the table when the games become really important?
So if it's really a blowout, one team's got much better players than the other. I'm looking at the intangibles, the body language, the effort, and are they truly going to obliterate this team by 30, 40 points and be relentless 25, or are they going to coast and win by 15? And are people going to be worried about their numbers? Are you going to, because, and you're going to see people subbing out in and out in a game like that. So what is their body language like? But if they are a cohesive, relentless unit that wants to play their best and against an inferior opponent can really put them away, that's what I'm looking for. If they slop through a 16-point win and there's not great body language, yeah, that would really, really concern me. Now, I want to ask myself a question here, if that's possible. Loyola is my surprise team. They might be really good. They might go from, you know, pull one of those NFL things from worst up towards the top of the league. I think they're really, really deep. And I think they have some proven guys, a nice mixture. I think they have incredible competition just to get on the court within their own program. I think that their coach is out to prove something, that last year was the exception, that he's going to put winning in the team first, that you better produce. I'm not going to babysit anyone here, and this is a deep, talented team. The Ivy League guys, especially Dolan. Dolan, I did a number of Cornell games last year. This guy's unique. This guy, in 100 years of Cornell basketball, has the best, well, they haven't kept assist to turnover for 100 years, but since they've been keeping it, he has by far the best assist to turnover ratio in school history while shooting the cover off the ball, shooting over 40% on threes. All this guy does is get assists, never lose the ball, and make shots, and he's sneaky, athletic, and big from the guard position. And now you combine him with Norris, and you have a two-guard system where now the pressure's off Norris to do everything and handle the ball and score. He's really got a backcourt mate that can really help him. They have depth up front. They believe Alston is better than last year, which is saying a mouthful. They have depth at the center position. They're older. That's my, if there's going to be a surprise, a team that's picked in the bottom half that's going to finish in the top half, that's my pick, clearly.
You took one of my hot takes. I think that they got back to the old Loyola identity. They look to have the kind of smart, tough, efficient roster that they had in all of their best years. And I think a lot of the A-10 fans just see them as a joke now because they came in year one and they finished dead last. And so, people aren't seeing what's coming in this season.
So the difference is some of their old teams had real star-level players, which is why they were able to go in a Final Four and a Sweet 16 and beat, I think, a number two seed Illinois team. I don't know if they have that kind of star power, but their depth is better. They have more good players. And I mean good players, not average players or A-10 players. They have 11 guys who are average to above average A-10 guys. And I believe the competition that they'll have in practice every day will be the whole iron sharpens iron thing. I believe that players won't take minutes for granted. I think that they'll push each other, and I think, and they have talents.
Like I said, I'm very intrigued by this team, so I'm happy to hear that you share the same thoughts on that. But the final question for you before we wrap this thing up, are you going to shed a tear? Because at the end of this year, the Tom Gola Arena, as we all know and make fun of, and at least the Gola boys love, will no longer be the same.
We'll still smell the chlorine from the pool beneath. You'll show up for a Saturday game and the parking lot will still be jammed with people going to the swim meet and you think it's for the basketball game. So the pool jokes will still live, but the arena will be better. The school has been committed to that for a long time. And, you know, certainly Coach Duffy being there has a lot to do with that. They've raised significant money. And Coach Dunphy has played a large role in that. Their new president, Dan Allen, has their new athletic director, Ashes. He's known his nickname, who came from Villanova and knows basketball and college athletics backwards and forwards. So that school right now is in really good hands. They're making improvements in the program. And it's going to be a bowl type thing. You can't make the space much bigger. So it's not like seating is going to be a whole lot better, but it'll have a bowl feel to it. It'll have more of an arena feel for it. I'm sure they're going to improve the amenities. And like everything, since Coach Dunphy's been there, it'll be focused on making things better.
Yeah, it's looking like things are going to be better in the arena for LaSalle coming up here. Hopefully things will be better for the A-10 as a whole this season. But one good thing that we know that we will have is Dr. John Giannini on the call for A-10 games on USA. Where else, if people are flipping channels, what other leagues, what other networks can we find you on this year?
I probably shouldn't be giving away my schedule, but because maybe it's not official and things could still change, but I'm very hopeful that of getting some Big Ten games, because NBC, who's been amazing to me and really gave me a schedule that I'm really excited about this year. I'm hopeful because they got a Big Ten contract this year that maybe I could be a part of that. Last year, and I'm hoping it'll happen again, I did a number of CAA games on CBS Sports. I will do some ESPN Plus Ivy League games for Columbia and Princeton. I used to do last year a bunch of Conference USA games for Stadium, but Stadium got out of live college basketball. So I'm really, really, really bummed out about that. In the past, I've done some Big East Fox games. Those have not come through. So I might not get the Fox or the Stadium work, but it looks like it's going to be more NBC and more CAA on CBS. So that'll be a blast.
Yeah, everyone be sure to go watch those games. I know anytime I saw you and John Fanta together on a CAA game last year, I made sure to carve out at least a little bit of time, and I didn't know what was going on with basically anyone in that league outside of College of Charleston. So,
yeah, well, I'll tell you, Charleston, that's a big deal this year. They have games, where did I put this? They have games against Duquesne, St. Louis, Rhode Island, and St. Joe's, and they're going to be really good again. And that's obviously strategic scheduling. A lot of people don't want to play Charleston. A lot of people don't want to play the top teams in the A-10. So they're going to play each other, and the outcome of those four A-10 Charleston games are going to be really important for those net rankings.
Yeah, the first Friday of the season, they play Duquesne at a neutral site. That is going to be a massive, massive prove-it game for the Dukes to kick off the year.
And the two FAU games, I'll tell you what, if A-10 wants to jumpstart this league, it's in Chicago, Loyola versus Florida Atlantic, the first week. That game is epic.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But Dr. John Giannini, thank you once again. Just one of the absolute best to come on this show. We always appreciate it when you give us your time.
I love talking with you guys and your knowledge and passion for the A10, and I get a lot out of it as well, and I'll be listening to you guys all year long.
Thank you all for listening to this episode. If you haven't already, be sure to go back. We dove into each of the 15 teams over the last few weeks, split out across a few episodes. And be sure to tune in on opening day Monday when we go through our final predictions, play our over-under game, and as always, go through some Power 8 hot takes with a special guest that I'm excited about. And you all should be too. So be sure to keep listening for that. If you like the show, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave us a review. You can send any commentary you got to us on Twitter at 3BidLeaguePod, on Blue Sky, 3BidLeaguePod, or if you prefer, you can shoot us an email, 3BidLeague@gmail.com. Opening day less than a week away. Basketball is around the corner.